everybody, welcome back to the Semi-Professional Academic Podcast. As always, I am your host with the most crumble points on my crumble account, Jacob Watts. And joining me today is the wonderful, the kind, and the oh so patient with me because I had to delay this interview start time three times, Rachel Henderson.
Hi.
Oh, Rachel, first off, thank you for your patience. And second, thank you for coming on to the show today.
Yeah, I'm super excited. As soon as Grace texted me about it, I was like, yes, my life dream is to be on Ologies by Allie Ward. So I was like, this is absolutely perfect. I want nothing more in my life than to be on a podcast. So yeah. Very excited to be here.
Everybody take notes. She's ready. She is ready. Also, Grace is Grace from season one of the podcast. And if you haven't listened to that yet, listen to that immediately after this one. But Rachel, how are things? How's your week going? At the time of filming this is a Thursday, so you know Friday, Junior.
Yes, I'm very excited. I only have to work for 3 hours tomorrow, so I'm really looking forward to it. It's been a busy week, so I'm glad I have this half day tomorrow.
A half day? I don't know if your school had them, but when I was in elementary school, this is before they got rid of them in Indiana, mm-hmm. we would have half days, and they were the best. They were the best days ever.
Yes.
Love it.
You didn't do anything in any of your classes. Everyone was just having a good time. It was great.
Yeah. And then you go home, it's a good start to the weekend. And then you come back Monday and you're actually ready to learn. And I think we've lost the plot so much.
Absolutely.
Some liberals want a 4-day work week. Some conservatives want a 5. What happened to the middle of the work week, 4.5?
Four and a half.
You know.
Or even less hours per day, I would be fine with. Give me a 6-hour work day.
Honestly, a 6-hour work day would eat.
It would.
You come in at if it's a regular 9 to 5.
That'll be a 9 to 3.
A 9 to 3,
That's amazing.
I feel that's the way to go. People are ready to work. They're not getting home at rush hour, which is really putting them home at 6 or 7.
Yes.
And I think that's the way to go. Rachel, besides coming through with some great policies about corporate America work, would you mind introducing yourself a little bit to our audience and letting us know a little bit about you?
Yeah, I like to call myself a psychologist in training. I have a bachelor's degree in psychology, and I'm working towards going to grad school for clinical psychology. That's kind of my current struggle in the academic world, is trying to get back to school after taking a break. Right now, I work as a psychometrist at IU Health in a neuropsychology memory clinic. So basically, my job, the short of it, is I test people for dementia and other sort of neurocognitive type of disorders. I've been doing that for almost 2 years now, which is kind of crazy. Graduated from my undergrad in 2022. So I've been working there ever since.
Nice. And where'd you say you went to undergrad again? I'm sorry, my brain might have just shorted out.
I don't think I even said it. I went to Butler University.
Oh, okay. Nice. And are you from the Indy area or?
No. So I actually grew up in a small town in North Texas. And then both of my parents grew up in Indianapolis, and I knew that my mom, when I graduated high school, wanted to move back up here to be closer to her family. So I kind of followed her up here. I applied to schools in the Midwest so that I would be close to her when she moved up here. So I've been in Indiana for 6 years, I guess, at this point. But I spent the first 18 years of my life in Texas. So,
yeah. Do you miss Texas?
No. Not really.
Honestly, no. Not even hesitation, just no.
No. I miss some of the people from there. I still have a lot of family down there, so I miss, my nephews live down there, my sister. So I do miss them, but I don't know if you can hear those dogs, but they're being very loud.
Yeah. We are joined today by two extra guests. Yeah. Now, what kind of dogs are they, Rachel? Do you know? I'm terrible with dogs.
They're Great Danes. Two Great Danes.
Yeah. I heard Great Danes are very vocal. I've only had cats and fish. So
Yeah. This is my first time ever like being around Great Danes. So they're like usually chill, but when they're not chill, it's like really loud. So
yeah, no in between. Either they're chill or very loud.
Yeah.
Real. Sure. So if you hear any dog barking on this episode, that's why.
Yeah, I apologize. They don't listen to me very well, so I can't make them be quiet.
Does any animal ever really listen, really?
That's true. That's very true.
So I have a lot of questions, and we may jump back and forth between questions.
Okay.
Like, you know, I never let my guests know peace. I always keep them on their toes. So you talked about how applying to like the Midwest, so like you'd be closer to your mom when you got up here. Mm-hmm. What kind of sold you on Butler, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, so I will say a couple things about Butler is that I really genuinely believe that 18-year-olds should not be able to make financially uncertain decisions. Because I will say I was not thinking about money when I applied to Butler. But I really liked the small class size. It's a pretty small school for, I don't know how much of your audience will know Butler. There's only about 5,000 undergraduates total. So our class sizes are very small. Most classes have less than 20 students in them, which was a big selling point for me. And as part of their psychology program, they have a really big undergraduate research program. So I started doing research as a sophomore and did it for 3 years as an undergrad. And I almost had a published paper coming out of undergrad, but it didn't quite get done with my like senior year. So it's still being worked on. But yeah, that research program was a really big draw for me. And just like the opportunities with such a small class to like really connect with your professors and build connections and networking and everything like that.
Yeah.
And the campus is gorgeous.
Yeah. I totally understand. Like, I'm sure Grace has told you, but Hanover, where Grace and I went to school, was very small. Like, when we graduated, I think about 11 to 1,200 mm-hmm. students total.
Yeah.
Average class size, about 14. And mm-hmm. then... And campus was gorgeous as well, but like it was like that. But we definitely got that really closeness with your professors, and I liked that. I mean, you got to learn that some of them were not great people, but that's neither here nor there. I don't know if that was your experience as well, or
I definitely had a few professors that they were, you know, about their like actual characters, people, but their teaching was just not good. And I had a lot of professors where, like, the semester after I had them for the class that they taught, they were basically like forced to retire because the program just didn't want them there anymore. So it was always like, literally, like, I would take that class, be like, I guess I have to take this professor because he's the only one that teaches it, which is a drawback of going to a small school. And then literally the next semester, they'd be like, Dr. Brahe, this person is leaving.
you almost spilled.
Any psychology student at Butler will know exactly which professor I'm talking about, even if they just started there. I'm sure that people still tell horror stories about his class.
Oh yeah, there's always that one professor everyone tells horror stories about.
Yeah.
For my Hanover STEM people, it was, should I say the name? I don't know. I won't. But it was the physics 161 professor with glasses. If you know, you know. But
yeah, my friends and I called this particular professor Monkey Man, because he always he wore, like, you know, those shirts that are like zoomed in faces of animals that like take over the whole shirt. He had one that was an orangutan. So it was like a big orangutan face that took over like his whole body. And he would wear it like at least twice a week to class. It was ridiculous.
My dog. Oh my gosh. No. I will say that, like, not necessarily for the problematic ones, but like in my undergrad, there was, I've talked about this on the pod before, but I literally was taking a OChem exam, and it was like the final before winter break.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, "Okay, like, you guys can like come in and your pajamas, whatever. And I'm not going to, like, I don't want to be crying and in my pajamas, like, when I take the exam.
Yeah.
And I walk in.
You need to have one or the other.
Yeah. I walk in, and this man is wearing, like, a freaking, like, Cardinal, like, St. Louis Cardinals, like, pajama mm-hmm. pants and a shirt that says, I forget what it was it said. What did it say? It said something stupid. I think it was a shirt that said it's Miller time, if I'm remembering correctly. I think it said it's Miller.
Oh my God.
And I was like, I'm about to fail an exam from a guy in mismatching clothes and rocking fucking Miller time.
Miller time.
Like, this is,
oh my gosh.
Like, this is, yeah. Like, this is really what I'm gonna do. This is really what's going on right now. So, like, I tell everyone, like, going to a small school for college is just like glee.
Yes.
Experience. Like, my first year there, and I don't know if like Butler had like similar stories going on, but like my first year there, that like members of a certain extremist group identified by wearing white pointy hoods.
Mm.
Like, was in the local town. And like advertising to students who like went into town to like come see them. And then in the same year, a professor threatened the president with violence. And then I ended up going on like a month long trip in a class to West Virginia to like look for snakes and lizards, and ended up getting lost.
Mm-hmm.
And got attacked by like a hawk vulture thing.
Oh my God.
Like this is all like, that's not even
that
everything.
That could be a TV show.
What?
That could be a TV show for sure.
I know. I say all the time, because my last name's Watts, I'd be like, Watts the TV with Jacob, like a reality show. it writes itself.
It does. Absolutely.
But no, just small school vibes.
Yeah. Our school, it's a really weird, like, dynamic, because it's a small school, but it's also, like, D1 sports, nationally known, because one season we had a really good run in the NCAA tournament. Like, it's a big basketball school, so anyone who pays attention to, like, national college sports will know who Butler is. So it's, like, small school vibes with big school politics. And that's a really weird dynamic to be in.
Yeah. That's
they're really very weird. Like, trying to be progressive, but like at the end of the day, 90% of the people that go there are rich white kids.
Yeah.
It's a weird dynamic for sure.
Knowing several students who like went to Butler.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I say this as if I also didn't go to private school.
Well, you know, me talking about it, I also went there, so.
Yeah, you know. But not us. not us.
Yeah, not me.
not me. Y'all stay safe, but not me. No. But I think this is something that, as I've gotten older, And at the time of filming this, I'm 24. I don't know when this is coming out, but like at my time filming this, I'm 24. And the way that I view college and like the politics that all that works, especially in academia, just from 18, I would say even from 18 to 20 to 22 to 24 are all drastically different with how I view everything.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I've learned like so much about the world in the last like 3 years of my life. And I like look back at me like age 19, 20, like I really thought like I'm an adult now. I know what's going on. And then like COVID happened and then I had to graduate college and go into the real world. And now I'm like, oh, so this is what life is actually like. And these are the things that actually matter in the grand scheme of things. It's, yeah, I feel like you just do so much growing in the like 22 to 24, 25 age.
I think you hit the nail on the head with that. Like, that's so true. And I think a lot of people don't realize, because like I, not to sound like a baby or whatever, but I got my associate's degree when I was 18 and no, got it when I was 17 actually. Yeah, I got my associate's degree when I was 17. And then a lot of people that also that was in my high school that also got their associates before going to college tried to finish college in 2 years.
Yeah.
And then just start out as juniors, then graduate as a senior, and then into the workforce. And not gonna lie, the thought of that sounds terrifying.
Yeah. And honestly, like, I don't know how people are like full adults with like families at age 20. There are so many people from my high school that I know who, like, you know, obviously like college isn't for everyone. And like, I totally respect the people that went right into the workforce. But I just feel like I know so many people that got married at 18, 19, started having kids at 20. And I'm just like, I absolutely cannot imagine me having a family and kids at that age. Like, I was still so immature. Like, I feel like I'm not even ready for that now. No. So it's like, I don't know if there's like just people grow up faster. I don't know, but I just cannot imagine living that life that young.
I tell everyone all the time, I am a teenager in his mid-20s.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, I'm also queer and neurodivergent, so I did not have, like, a real... This is going to sound really depressing. Yeah. I don't mean it to be. But as queer people, like, as queer people who grow up in the closet and don't come out later in life, that's not a real development time.
Absolutely, I agree. Yes.
Yeah, we got a psychologist in training backing me up on that. Approved. Approved, everybody.
Approved. No.
But no, like,
yeah,
I don't know. So,
yeah, I absolutely agree. Like, I look back at like my like high school years, and like everyone around me was like getting their first boyfriends, going on their first dates, having their first kiss. It happened for me until I was 22 years old. So, like, it does kind of feel like all of these, like, it's like a weird situation because it's like I'm mature now versus when I was 16, but at the same time, like, I still have those little like first experiences and like my first times like being an adult, but also my first times being a kid at the same time. And it's a very weird dynamic for sure to have.
Yeah, I was reading about it once and they termed it delayed adolescence. Because as gay people, we get to choose our family. Okay, not the RuPaul, not the RuPaul, but like, you know, as people who grow up queer, like, and I grew up in a very small conservative town.
Yep. Same.
Yeah. Okay. I didn't want to assume, but like, so having that kind of be the lay of the land and like kind of accepted as like the only way to be. Mm-hmm. You kind of learn very quickly to adapt for, I mean, like, this is, I don't mean to sound dramatic, but like really survival, honestly.
I mean, yeah, basically. And the thing, like, in my town is my graduating class had 93 people in it.
Oh my gosh, mine had 90. Hey girl, hey. High five.
Yeah. High fives.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like really small town, like rural Texas, there were more Baptist churches than there were grocery stores, you know? So yeah. It's like
five churches in my city, not a single Walmart.
Yeah, no, we had to drive like 20 minutes to get to the Walmart.
Real same.
To the Target.
Same. 30 minutes to the movie theater.
Yeah, yeah.
I see you. I see you.
Yeah. It's a very like specific culture to be like closeted queer in that environment. But it's also like for me, it wasn't even like in the realm of possibilities for me to be queer. Like I didn't see, like there were very few pieces of media that I was consuming that had queer women. So like I knew that like gay men existed, but like there was this weird moment in like high school where I was like, oh wait, like that's something that people do. Like it's, there are actually gay women in the world. And the fact that that didn't happen for me until I was like 12, 13, 14, like is so crazy to think about, but it just really like, it just was not something that was like presented to me as an option. And like, I remember, I think my first exposure to like queer women was I Kissed a Girl by Katy Perry.
So real. So real. That album is so,
so real.
That song and that whole album is so gay.
Like, yeah. No, it really is.
Like Katy's like, I'm making an album for the girls, gays and theys. And it ate.
It's so good.
Ate. No, like, don't get me wrong. Never had, I don't like pure pop perfection.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Like I just have such vivid memories of like when that song came out and like the reactions of like the people in my community to that song.
Oh girl, same.
Really like set the tone for me as like, this is not something I'm allowed to think about. I can't even listen to a song that might maybe reference it. Like, and that really stuck with me until I left that town and came to college.
This is why I tell everyone to get out of your small rural town and see the world, even if it's just for a year. Yes. And like, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with like living it, like living there, because I'm really not, But I think you owe it to yourself to see what else is out there. Of course. I mean, like, granted, if you have the privilege to do so, do it.
Yeah.
Do it. Like, you're going to be so grateful for it. And I don't know. I think it just makes you like a more tolerant person.
Yeah, absolutely. And for me, like coming up to Butler, I had a professor that said in one of my like early classes, she was talking about the culture of Indiana and of Butler's campus specifically. And she said, for some of you, this is the most diverse place that you've been before. But for others of you, this is the least diverse place. And that really like stuck with me because I was like, yeah, like this is the most diverse place I've ever been before. Like we had 2 people of color in my graduating class. Mm-hmm. Because most of them that like started kindergarten at my school would move to the district next to us because they would get bullied out of our school if they were different. So I like had absolutely zero exposure to people of other cultures, other religions. I never met a Jewish person until I came to Butler. I knew one Muslim person. Like it really was like such an eye-opening experience to just like be around different ideas and have that, like, I wasn't able to just like be comfortable with what I was used to anymore. And that was really, really powerful for me.
Yeah, no. And I mean, I went to like a predominantly white institution as well. But I mean, small town Southern Indiana is not really known for its diversity. So,
yeah.
So, yeah, I had a very similar feeling like getting to kind of be exposed to that, all these different religions, all these different cultures, nationalities, and just like really having that. I mean, it wasn't, in grand scheme of things, it was not really diverse, but to me, it was so diverse.
Yeah, that's exactly how Butler is. Like, it is overwhelmingly rich white people, or white people with rich parents. But then they do a lot of work to counteract that. Like, they do a lot of scholarships. They do a lot of things that are only for people of diverse backgrounds to try and improve that. So there are like little pockets within Butler where you can find those experiences. But yeah, coming from my undergrad or from my high school, it was like crazy diverse. And then to realize that, like, even at Butler, like, that's not a representation of the US as a whole. Like, it is still so, there's still so much more diversity that I haven't been exposed to even now. And I'm much more aware of that now than I was at 18.
Yeah. And I think within academia and in life in general, having diverse people and perspectives is, in my opinion, the only way to truly advance anything.
Yes, absolutely.
And I mean, if this tells you why we need more people in the room, a Christian university, which I found this out on TikTok, and this is my favorite thing ever, and I'm going to be so upset if TikTok gets banned for multiple reasons, but one of this like this, the Christian University of Michigan, whose acronyms are CUM for short, made a sweatshirt with that and then Cardinals. So it read "Come Cardinals" as merch. It is official, like that put out, like people bought it. And I'm like, this is
not a single person looked at that and said, this is not a good idea.
This is why you need more people in the room, and like not to be that guy, but like Christians aren't necessarily known for like thinking things all the way through.
Very true.
I can say that I grew up Christian / Baptist, so like I can say that.
Same. Literally same.
Wow. Oh my gosh, wow. Same energy, different forms.
Literally.
So you know, avoid the cum Cardinals and be diverse.
Be diverse. Yeah, that makes me think about when you're talking about like how we need more people in the academic fields to make sure that things like that don't happen. And that's obviously like a funny like joke, like cum Cardinals, that's funny. But in like my field, specifically in neuropsychology, which is what I want to do eventually, there was just a big study done in 2020, was like 4 years ago now, but it started in 2020.
I hated that.
I like, looked down at the clock and I was like, how was that 4 years ago?
Oh my God. Wow. You know what, Rachel? Not everything needs to be said. Like, oh my God. Like that was ow. That was painful. That was really painful.
It hurt me to say as well.
It should have. That was rude.
I was thinking, like, I guess it was not that recent of a study, like in the grand scheme of things. Like,
it's like 5 years
is still recent.
Isn't that the worst? Like, a great fucking study can come along, and then for those of you who are not familiar with the academic publishing process, it can take months, if not years, before a paper is like submitted and accepted and published to the public.
Yeah.
And so you spend all this time getting this paper, and then like 2 years go by, and then it's deemed like an old study.
Yeah. Like, it's so crazy to me.
Like the shelf life of a new academic paper.
Yeah. Like, don't you dare cite something that was 5 years ago. Absolutely not. That's how my professors were. They're like, unless it's a classic, like unless you're citing Freud himself, that paper better have been published in the last 5 years.
That's the thing I don't understand. Be like, you realize the only reason why these papers have become classic is that they got cited more than during that 5 year window. Which it gives gatekeeping.
Yes. Yeah. It does.
Yeah. You know, now that we opened the field to like diverse, and now we have to limit it to like this old white man whose papers were like one figure.
Yeah. And horribly unethical, I'm sure. Whatever paper it is.
You know, I'm just going to say it, like, old white men are not known to be ethical.
No, absolutely not. Especially not in psychology. There's a lot of...
Yeah, name one. Name one, quickly. Name one, quickly, off the top of your head. Go. Time's up.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, do better, everybody. Like, that's the thing. Like, I think, of course, I understand why you would want the most recent papers to be cited is so that you are up to date as much as you can on in your field. And I definitely feel like you should. I definitely feel like you should include the newest studies as possible. However, if you're working like on a niche area.
Yes.
You're like, for example, like my lab, we work on sawflies. We're like, very few labs work on the exact species of sawflies that we do like regularly. So like there's not, it's not like we can type in da 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 and find like 100 papers that have been cited that have been published that year. So I don't know. Like I have my own beefs with that, and it gives gatekeeping. It gives.
I feel like with the age of the internet and like with the, like, I don't know, virtual, not virtual, like e-journals and things like that, where like things are being published only online. There's just so many works that are being published because there's more avenues now, which is great. Like, that's a good thing. But then you go and put limits on what is considered like something that's good to use in a class or in a, you know, whatever. And I feel like it causes those like really good articles to get lost in just the amount of them. Like, it's so hard to find what you're looking for in general.
Yeah.
And I think the more like walls we put around like what we're looking for, we're probably missing some really great articles that could and should be cited in our works.
No, I totally agree. And I'm always hesitant when like a older individual tells me that. I mean, I'm getting taught by people who, when they were doing their PhDs, like the way they got papers was to go down to the library and see what tens of papers got published that year or like that 6 months. You know what I mean? Tens of papers that year might have been like a little dramatic, but like the volume of work that is being published now, which is great because like, we're expanding science, like, let's go. I don't know. Like it just doesn't sit right with me. And for that exact same reason, I feel like unless by chance you happen to find a perfect paper within that 5-year window. There's a lot of issues I have with that. But speaking of psychology and Butler, Rachel, did you always know that you wanted to study psychology, or how did that come about?
So I feel like looking back, I was always super interested in psychology. Like, I remember watching, there was like a documentary on this like child with schizophrenia, which has been like, nowadays it's like, you wouldn't expect a 7-year-old to be diagnosed with schizophrenia. And like the fact that there's a lot of controversy around that particular case and like the publicity of it. But all that aside, I used to watch that documentary all the time. And there was like, most kids my age were consuming like funny videos on YouTube. I was watching videos about the history of insane asylums and the history of treatments. Like I was that kind of kid. So, like,
the history of insane asylums. That's crazy. Yeah. That, I love that though, but that's crazy.
Yeah. So like, just imagine like a 12-year-old kid, my first ever personal laptop, that I can have in my room and watch YouTube at night, you know, whatever. And all the things that I could do on that laptop. And I was watching documentaries about psychology. So I've known for a really long time that's the path I wanted to go down. I did have a little stint in middle school where I wanted to be a biomedical engineer. And then I took Algebra 1. And then I was like, that's a lot of math that's going to be in that field. And I did not enjoy that class. So let's not do that. And let's rethink things.
Math's not real.
I really like math, but like not, I can't do that as a career. Like, No,
Rachel, math is not real. Because how do you prove math is real? You have to accept math is real in order to prove math is real.
Yeah.
No.
I don't get that. And no. I don't like to think about those things. It breaks my brain.
If your brain stay broken, it don't gotta get broken.
That's true, I guess.
Yeah. Same, if you stay depressed, you ain't gonna get depressed. No, I'm kidding. Don't actually do that.
Go to therapy.
Everybody should go to therapy. I love going to therapy.
I agree.
Oh, I talked about this on the show. I graduated from therapy, so like I can do no wrong. Ooh. Yeah, my therapist told me like I don't think you need me anymore. Like I think you got this. Amazing. Like and I was just like,
dream.
And I was just like, thanks.
Thanks, bestie.
Thanks, like bestie. No, it got to the point to where like at my end of my sessions, I'd be like, oh, you'll never believe what this person did, because I would just like fully be telling my therapist like everything. And I went in there because like it was like during like just all about me this little moment. I went in there because I was really depressed. Like I just started grad school is depressing. Mm-hmm. Happens. And I was worried that I was a bad person.
Yeah.
So I was
absolutely.
So I was like, you know, let's get to like the core of like why I think this way. Let's analyze some behavior. Let's get some help to like how to like fix that so I don't feel like this. Mm-hmm. And then my therapist was like, actually, I don't think you did anything wrong. I think you just got gaslighted like into this. And I was just like, I knew it. I knew I was never the problem. I knew it was a problem
and it was not me. It was you.
It was not me. It was so gratifying. I literally went on at that point in time, I was really active on TikTok Live. And mm-hmm. and I was like live TikTok from after my therapy session. And I got on there. I said, I just want y'all to know, I just went to my counselor, Rachel, and she said all of y'all was the problem, but not me. Like, so think about that.
Yeah, I'm such a firm believer that everyone benefits from therapy. And it's like, I tell my friends and like my family all the time, like, even if like you think things are fine for you, like you have no idea how not fine they are until someone tells you and is able to like reflect back with you about like what's going on. And that's what was like a big help for me in therapy, is just like my mindset about my past going into therapy was like, well, some things were bad, but like overall, like I'm fine. Like things are fine. People have it way worse. Like it's fine. Yeah. So my first therapy appointment, and she was like, I can't imagine going through all of that at such a young age. I was like, oh, what do you mean? Does everyone not go through that at age 7? Like, what do you mean?
That's so real. No, because like I grew up, because like as we were talking about, like I grew up in the church, and it was made very clear by the people of the church that homosexuality was a sin, and they said this as they cheated on their spouse, but whatever. And then I was like thinking, and they were like showed scenes like gays are sinners and sinners are going to burn in hell and all that and all the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And like at 7 years old, I became aware. It's like, yeah, like I can never be happy and that's going to be okay. Cause then like, I won't burn in hell. And then like, I told my therapist that and I was just like, and then I was laughing, be like, that's so funny. And then she was like,
yeah,
she's like, you realize like, that's not normal, right? And I was just like, what do you mean? Like,
what do you mean?
How does anyone else build a personality at that age? Like,
no, exactly. Well, that's what, like, with my churches back home, like, I didn't realize how, like, fundamentalist and, like, conservative they were until I would, like, tell people, like, when you have to explain what your church believed to someone who did not grow up with that same background, you like see them process and be like, that doesn't make any sense. And then you're like, yeah, now that I'm saying it out loud to you and you're saying it back to me, that does sound crazy. Like, how?
Yeah, no. And you're like, no, insane. But like, you see here is, trust me, bro.
Yeah, but trust me, like, there are three people, but they're all one person. But they're distinct. And they don't share memories, but they also do because they're all omniscient and out of time. And then you're like, wait a minute. None of that makes any sense. Like,
now that I think about it, it's giving very Steven Universe.
I never watched that. Fun fact about me.
Oh, you should. I think you'd love it.
I didn't watch most things. And it's not even like I didn't live in a household where like I wasn't allowed to watch things. It's just that, as discussed earlier, I was watching educational things even when I had options not to. Most of my childhood, I chose to watch How It's Made, Unwrapped, and Good Eats. Those were my favorite shows as a kid.
Wait, Unwrapped, like on the Food Network?
Yeah.
I loved that show.
Yes, it was just so good. I loved his voice was so satisfying. Mm-hmm. And it would be like Unwrapped and Good Eats back to back on the Food Network at night while I was falling asleep. And it was just like the most perfect time for me.
Yeah. Robert Irvine from Dinner Impossible on the Food Network was my gay awakening.
Mm. That makes sense.
Good times. Yeah. So, Rachel, we are studying psychology, and you mentioned it before that they had a great research program. Mm-hmm. And did you join that with the intent of like getting research in a specific area, or were you just wanting to like experience any kind of research?
Yeah. So, I was super lucky that one of my professors at Butler worked as a clinical neuropsychologist before moving into the academia world. So she was like, had a practice. She worked at the Rehab Hospital of Indiana, like was doing very clinical stuff before moving into being a professor. And so all of her research was mostly focused in the neuropsych realm, which I knew coming into undergrad at that point, I knew that's what I wanted to do. But I also just knew that I wanted to experience research. And going into my freshman year, I really thought that research is what I wanted to do. Like post-grad school, I wanted to be a professor and do research, and that's what I wanted to do. I've since kind of shifted that because I didn't like stats as much as I thought I would. And the thought of dealing with that for the rest of my life.
Who likes stats? Who likes doing stats? No one. You're lying. You're lying if you do. You're lying if you do.
People that choose to be like statisticians, like you go to grad school for biostats. I'm sorry. I'm judging you just a little bit. I feel like people that do like sports stats, somehow that feels better to me. But like if you're getting a PhD in biostats, what are you doing?
Drag them, Rachel. Drag them hard. This is so funny because one of the undergrads in my lab is like applying to get his master in biostats, and I'm just like, oh.
Yeah, no, I know someone who went for biostats masters too. Yeah,
it's okay.
You just don't get it. Like, you can do what you want, but couldn't be me. And I'm judging you a little bit. That's my philosophy.
on the subject, do you think we should bring back bullying, but like bullying like with a purpose, like not bullying people for like clothes, their looks or whatever, but like if they do something dumb, like,
see, at that point I feel like it's not bullying. I feel like it's just being truthful with them.
Like, to be truthful, not the being truthful.
Like, one thing about me is that I am a hater to my core. And I'm like the most non-confrontational person that you'll ever meet.
Are you sure?
Yeah, that's the thing that's weird though, right? It's like, I will never say something to someone. And maybe this is an issue, but the second that I'm like with my partner, like with my friends, I'm like, do you want to hear the shit that happened with this person today?
Man, the sound bites are popping today.
I know, I'm full of one-liners. It's a specialty.
Say no, the amount of people who have like a notes app on their phone with quotes that I say should be studied. Be studied. Like the other day, like I bought, shout out Serena. She doesn't, she has listened to a couple episodes. So if you're listening, great. And then if you're not, I thought our friendship meant something, but okay. we went to Crumble and like I bought her cookie because like I'm not going to like trip over $4. Like it's fine. And she was like, oh, thank you, God. And I was just like, did God direct deposit that money? Like, what are you doing? And she goes, no, I'm thanking God for you. And I goes, ah, oh, more people should thank God for me.
That is absolutely something that I would say.
I know. And like, you know, like, I know,
more people
like,
should thank God for you, honestly.
Right? Like, I mean, good Lord. Like, they think, like, people thank God for their mid-looking ass husbands who can't find his own ass in the ground. But like me being the icon, I get no thanks. Like,
what gives?
I mean, like, I don't even consider myself a religious person. But like, if there is a God, like he popped off with me. Like what? Like what? Like
what? Absolutely like, true.
I said
that's the kind of confidence that I think everyone needs.
Oh, it's all a facade. Don't worry.
Exactly. I feel like people that are like genuinely that confident, I don't know, it's like a little bit of a red flag, but like the ability to fake confidence is what people need, in my opinion.
Yeah, if I was genuinely that confident all the time, lobotomy. Something's wrong.
True. I watched a great documentary about lobotomies once as a kid. I loved learning about things like that. I was a weird kid. Still weird. I don't know. You know, it's
the best people are. The best people are. Like, being weird and having trauma makes the best people. If non-weird, non-traumatized people were a spice, they'd be flour.
Yeah, literally so boring. Where's the flavor?
I don't taste
Where's the spice?
Yeah. My advisor, like... She has never said this out loud, but like just some of the things I say, I think is like making her go, ugh. Because, you know, professionalism is just hard when you're naturally hilarious.
Yes, I have such a hard time at my job. And I'm like, I'm the only Gen Z at my job. So it's.
Oh my gosh. Me and the lab manager are the only Gen Z people on staff.
I think I'm the youngest person by like 20 years. There and it's like it's every time someone says something about like a year, they'll turn to me and go, "I was born in 1995," and I have to be like, "I wasn't born yet." And then they'll go, "Oh my god, we're so old!" And it's just like every single time, I'm like, "This is such a strange dynamic."
Mm-hmm. So in the management of my lab, there's my PI. She's 44, I think. So early 40s. And then the most senior PhD student, she's 33. The middle PhD student, because I'm the youngest, is 31. Her postdoc, I think she's 32. And then I'm 24 and the lab manager is 22. I will say, though, my lab is very funny. Like, my lab is very funny. But, yeah. Like, Gen X from the PI humor, millennial humor from the postdoc and the older two PhD students, and then the Gen Z humor are, like, very different.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of, like, my work we have. I'm almost 24. And then the next youngest person that's, like, a faculty there is 33, I think. And then we have a postdoctoral fellowship. So there's 6 postdocs there at a time. And they're usually between, like, 29 to 35, I think is the oldest one that we have. And then, like, the next youngest person after that is, like, mid-60s. So it's, like, a very interesting group of people, for sure. It's a very weird dynamic.
Yeah. Gen Z humor, I think, is just so funny because, granted, I'm biased because I am Gen Z, but
true.
I love the fact that, like the other day, I called a professor and I was like, he has the personality of an unbaked saltine cracker. My advisor goes, like, you can't say that.
But it's not bullying if it's true. That's
being truthful, Catherine. I thought it was a science to report true results.
Yeah, that's my humor. I feel like the Gen Z humor is so unique because of the amount of social media that we grew up with. But, like, in a different way than, like, the Gen Alphas grew up with social media. Like, I feel like we had this weird, like, transitional period where we were, like, early users on Facebook, early users on Twitter, Instagram. And now, like, we've grown with those platforms into what they are now. Mm-hmm. And I think that, like, little bubble of people really just, like, we're so interconnected that, like, I feel like the memes and jokes that we have now have just gone through so many layers of transformation that it's, like, for people outside of that bubble, it's, like, nonsense to them. But, like, you're in that group, you know exactly what someone's saying when they, you know, make a specific reference.
Yeah. Like, I love Vine. I miss Vine so much.
I miss Vine, too.
Like, look at all those chickens.
I quote, I smell like beef literally all the time to everyone.
I smell like beef.
Or from the same girl, the it's fucking bats. I love Halloween. I say that all the time. Anytime anything happens, I'm like, it's freaking bats. I love Halloween.
My favorite Halloween Vine was this kid who, like, drew a picture for, like, for school or whatever, and goes, I had a great time when I was chicken crit. I had lots of emoca on my foss. Like, Hurricane Tortilla.
Hurricane Tortilla. Okay.
Is that lizard? You dumb bitch, that's a Cremota dragon. I think
my favorite one to quote in high school was the one that's like, even though I look like a burnt chicken nugget, I still love myself.
The way, because I think this is a hot take, but I think the shows we watched as a kid, like, the parental guidance things were, like, very generous on that. Like, going back and watching old TV shows, I was like, there's so many sexual innuendos. Like, there's so many, like,
absolutely,
like, jokes here. I'm like, okay, like, no, this is why we're so funny. Like the just barriers gone.
Yes. Yeah.
And you know what? Absolutely. I think it makes us funnier, you know, because no one writes about in history books, oh, they were so well behaved. They didn't do anything.
A well behaved woman hardly ever makes history. I had a little print of that on my wall in middle school.
That's true.
True. Be gay, do crimes.
Be gay, do crimes. Yeah. Yes. That's the philosophy.
That's the whole plot. 2024 is the plot, you know?
Yeah. Be gay, do crimes.
Yeah. But speaking of the plot, so you kind of talked about it, but upon graduation, did you know that you were going to like end up in the position you are now? Or like, how did that kind of come to be?
Yeah. So I really wanted to go straight into grad school from undergrad. That was kind of like my goal as like a junior. But then my senior year, when I started like looking at schools, I realized that like I was not going to be competitive getting into a program without going to work experience, because specifically the neuropsych field is so small right now, but it's like in the process of growing. So there's like an excess amount of people that want the PhD and PsyD positions. For like 20 schools in the nation have like a specific neuropsych PhD. And so each one maybe accepts 2 students a year, if that. So like there's really not many spots for students. So I decided that I wanted to just get a couple years of work experience and whatever before applying. And the best job that you can get in between undergrad and graduate school for neuropsych is psychometry, which is what I do now. But I was really like nervous about finding a job that fit that in Indianapolis. But I'd already committed and like signed a lease to living in Indianapolis. So I was like super nervous. I was applying to like a bunch of different jobs of like different kinds. I had this like panic right as I graduated of like, I'm not gonna be able to find a job. What if I just switch gears altogether and go into biology? Like I could do that. Like I could just like totally do biology. So I was like applying to like biology research labs as like research assistants and things like that. And then this job kind of just like fell into my lap. And I was like, well, this could not have gone any better for me. So what happened is I applied to a pediatric neuropsychology position, knowing that I really don't like kids. So I got that job position like in an email from my professor, and I was like talking to her in her office, and I was like, I was like, Dr. L, I don't really like kids that much. Like, I don't think I'd be very good for this job. So like, what's the point? And she was like, well, even if you end up not getting it, like it's still good work interview experience. So I was like, okay, I'll just apply, whatever. So I got an interview. So I went in and I was pretty upfront with them about like, I want to work with older adults. I want to do dementia. I've never worked with kids before in any professional capacity. And they were like, by the end of it, they were like, okay, I could tell that they were like, this is probably not for you. And I was like, yeah, it probably isn't for me. You're so right. But then they said, what we're going to do is give your information to our colleagues in the adult department, because they're going to have a job opening in a couple of months. So they just sent all of my information over to my boss now. And when that job opened up, he called me and was like, I want you to apply to this job. So it was kind of like a perfect set of things that just like worked out really well.
You really must have impressed those people to like fully come in and be like, this is not what I want to do, but this is what I mean, obviously a lot better than I'm making it sound.
Yeah.
To be like, you know what? We're going to pass this information along to like our like colleague, because they didn't need to do that. So like,
yeah, I was so shocked. Yeah. But yeah, it worked out honestly like better than it possibly could have. Like this job is absolutely perfect for this like in between. I wouldn't want to do this for the rest of my life, but it's setting me up so well for grad school. And it's like more than I could have asked for in a job. So although not as much money as I wish I was making, but it's fine. It's fine.
No one makes enough money.
True.
Except CEOs. They make way too much.
Yeah.
Eat the rich, tax the rich.
Yeah. Eat the rich. Exactly.
Except Taylor Swift. Please don't. I love her. You know, But I'm bringing it to another question. Have you applied to grad school yet or like before?
Yeah, so I just went through the application cycle this year.
Yikes, I'm sorry.
And it did not work out for me, so.
The grad school application process is insane.
It's brutal. Well, and like, I only applied to 4 schools. And I kind of went into it like knowing that like I might not be the most qualified candidate. Like, I knew that there were going to be a lot of people applying out of master's programs and with like more work experience, more research, whatever. So I like went into it very like, most people don't get in their first try with such a specialized field. Like, it'll be fine. Like, it'll be fine, whatever. So I applied to 4 schools and then I got interviews at 3 of them, which was amazing.
That's a great numbers. Good job.
Yeah. I honestly, it went, even though I like ended up not going anywhere, like I'm still going to be working at the same job for another year at least. I feel like I had a really successful application cycle. So I got 3 interviews. All of my interviews like went pretty good. I got invited to a second round of interviews at one of my schools that had 2 interview rounds. So I basically like made it to the final group of people at all of the schools I got interviewed for. But then one of the schools, and I won't name names, but one of the schools in Indianapolis accepts more students or gives offers to more students than they have spots for. So if you don't respond and put your deposit in within like a week, you get put on the wait list. So
say their names. Say their names. Say their names. I knew it. I knew it. I knew it. I knew it. I knew it.
They did me real dirty. So I like, I got in there and like, they told me that I was in like the top group of applicants that got early admission. So I got my email like 3 days before everyone else. But then, like, within 6 days from my initial email, all of their spots were full. And I hadn't even gone to all my other interviews yet at that point. And I was like, literally, what is happening? Like,
they wanted you to commit that second.
Yeah. And it's like, I didn't get a single assistantship. Like, I didn't get any money. And it's like $30,000 a year. Like, that's a lot of money.
And this be a master? Was this going to be a master's or a doctorate?
It was a doctorate, so a psychology doctorate.
And how long are those programs usually?
So usually it's a 5-year program, 4 years on campus, and then a 5th year of internship.
Okay, so like similar time to that of a PhD.
Yeah, it's pretty comparable. And like with psychology, like the PsyD and the PhD in psychology are very similar as far as like what you can do with it. The difference for a PsyD versus PhD is the PsyDs are, they consider themselves like clinician researcher or like clinician scholar, whereas like most PhDs will be scholar clinician. And that's kind of like, I don't know if other fields use those like terms, but it's kind of like a quick way for a school to say like, we prioritize academia research first and then your clinical, whereas the PsyDs are more clinical focused with research on the side. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the difference. But I mean, as far as like timeline and like what you can do with the degree, like you can be a licensed psychologist in Indiana with both. Like, you can take your boards with both. So they're really, the big difference is just how much research they do. And I think because of that, there's less variability in the amount of time it takes to complete a PsyD because the dissertation is much smaller and much, say, more basic, but
like streamlined?
Not as extensive. Yeah. Most people don't do like big groundbreaking, like really important. I mean, like all research is important, but most people are just kind of like let me get some survey responses. Let me analyze this data.
Not the survey responses.
Like, that's how most, like, PsyD dissertations are. Like, it's very, like, get it done as quick as possible.
Take the time. Take the time to complete this survey, monkey.
Yeah, literally. Yeah, so most PsyD programs are 5 years. And then, for me, I want to do neuropsychology specifically. So, to sit for neuropsychology boards, you have to do a 2-year postdoc. So all in all, it'll be like 7 years of like school. Like, I consider postdoc still school, but I don't know. So 7 years from getting into grad school to being a licensed psychologist. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. Cool. So were all of the programs you applied to PsyDs, or was there some PhDs there? Or?
Yeah, so I was initially looking at both and then ended up applying just to PsyDs, which I think was a mistake because I think that I didn't realize this until I was going through the interview process and like talking with faculty about dissertation and things like that. I didn't realize how much I really wanted to do research for like my grad school. Obviously it's required either way, but I was just finding that the PsyD programs just like, it seemed like the research idea I had was more involved than most of their research was. But I ended up applying to only PsyDs, and the main reason that I ended up doing it that way was really just because there's like less steps in applying to a PsyD. So like most PhDs, like you have to like reach out to the faculty and like talk with them before like even submitting your like, you know, and if you don't do that, you're basically not going to get in, that kind of thing. It's not like that with PsyDs. Like you just send in your applications and like that's it. So the reason that I decided to do PsyDs was so that I didn't have to do that extra step, which like, it's like not that big of a deal. And like, I really wish, like, I'm kind of like kicking myself now that I didn't just like go ahead and do that, because there are just more options and there's more funding for PhD programs. Yeah. So it was all PsyDs, but.
We love a funded PhD.
Woo-hoo. Yes. Yeah. And that was like. So one of the schools that I applied to essentially fully funds their students, which was insane.
Love.
Yeah. Indiana State. I really wanted to go there. I got waitlisted, so it's fine. But yeah, I think that next year or whenever I decide to apply again, I can't decide if I'm going to wait another year or not. I'll probably apply to mainly PhD programs. So, yeah, I feel like even though I didn't end up matching to a school perfectly, I learned so much about the type of school that I want to go to and like so much about myself as a student and clinician through this application process, that I feel like I'm way more prepared for this next cycle than I was this time. So
that's honestly so, I mean, obviously like you would love to get in on your first try. Like anyone who says otherwise is lying, but
yeah,
the fact that like you're able to look at it now, realize, oh, like I actually like want to do more research and mm-hmm. you know that now, honestly, that might be such a good thing. Plus also, like, I'm not going to pretend like I'm an expert in academia by any means, but I feel like there's a lot more opportunity for funding with PhDs.
Yes, granted, absolutely there are.
So who knows? Maybe, you know, that's, I don't know. Like, I know like that's annoying to think about, but like, I don't know. Also like, $30,000 a year to go to a school.
Yeah.
So like, it's not like you'd be able to focus on that or like
even like TA your way through it. Like you'd have to work.
Yeah.
While going.
But that's the thing. That's the thing too about all of these schools. They're all like, we really encourage you not to work. Like it's like, don't do that to yourself. Like it's not a good idea. And I was just sitting there like, how do you expect people to come into this field? And like, there's so much emphasis on like trying to get diverse backgrounds into the field. But I'm like, how are you going to do that and not offer scholarships, not that offer part. Funding, not offer even like an assistantship to every student? How is that going to work? And that's what I think frustrated me so much about the situation with like the pressure to commit to UIndy was like, you're pressuring me to commit to $150,000 of debt in a week. Like, you're only giving me 6 days to think about that. Like, that's a big decision. And that pressure, I just really, like, the more that I thought about it, like, after the fact, like, after I got over the emotions of, like, not being able to go to grad school, that whole situation, like, looking back, I'm like, that's just so messed up to do to a student. Like, that pressure when the stakes are that high for you, like, I was just, the whole situation, I was like, I kind of feel like I maybe dodged a bullet with not going there.
I think you did too. And I don't know, like, this is a hot take. I feel like for jobs that are literally responsible for the betterment of society, it's causing way too high of a debt for people to get the credentials to do them.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, there are like loan repayment systems for that. Like with like a PsyD, if I worked as a psychologist at like the VA or at a nonprofit hospital, after 10 years of working there, I could get my loans forgiven. But then even that's not a guarantee, because there's so much like bureaucracy, I guess is the word, behind filling out those forms. And like, you have to wait until you've worked for 10 years, but then it might take 5 years for your application to be processed. And you have to be paying on your loans that whole time. And it's just, the whole situation is messed up, in my opinion.
No, agreed. And like, I mean, you saw it, and like, not to get political on here, but like, we couldn't forgive like $10,000 of student loan debt like to everybody.
Yeah.
But the USA can donate millions and millions of dollars to Israel. Like,
yeah. Literally.
Like, the amount of money.
What are we doing?
The amount of money they've given to Israel could have fixed homelessness and the student loan crisis.
Yeah.
In the US.
It's, yeah, that makes me so angry whenever I think about it. And just like in general, like even before all the money we gave to Israel, like the budget that our military has.
Our budget?
For like no reason.
Outspends the next like 20 combined. Most of them being our allies.
Yeah.
I would get it. Like, I would get it if we're like in the middle of like nowhere country.
Yeah.
And like, we gotta get worried about being invaded. But I mean, like,
What are we doing? Like, we have military outposts in so many countries. Literally for what? Like, I have a friend from high school who went into the army, and she was stationed in Italy. Like, why do we have a military base on Italy? Like, literally why? It does not make sense.
But how does one get that set assignment just out of, you know, curiosity?
I don't know. It's like, so the whole like assignment situation with the army is like weird and messed up. But
no, but yeah, being stationed in Italy, low-key, like...
Yeah, honestly, like, seemed like a good time. And, like, like every now and then she would have to like go. She was like a paratrooper medic, something like that. So they would go and do like jumps where they would like jump out of an airplane, but like not into war or anything, just like to do it for practice. And then they'd go back to base, and then she would go, you know, to France for the weekend. And I'm like, what is this life? Like, literally, what?
Yeah, what's happening? No, I would want to join the military, but I'd only want to be like a commentator, you know, like, can you imagine like on the sidelines, be like, oh, Jimmy just dropped out of the airplane with a star formation. Rachel, I don't know. We've never seen that Truman since like the outbreak of 91. Like, I, you know, like,
yeah,
like just so unserious. I mean, like,
so unserious.
But the world is so unserious if you think about it. Like, the U.S. literally has a Axis and Allies game of World War II where you have to play as either the Axis or the Allies and to win.
That's so much.
Like,
why are we're so desensitized to all that stuff these days? Like, that's crazy.
Like, I fear we lost the plot. I feel like we lost the plot.
I feel like we lost it a long time ago. And it's just, like, in the ether. Like, nowhere to be found. Like, we're past the point of being able to, like, come back and find it again. Like, it's just gone.
Yeah, you know, like, we're just here. And then I say this, and then I buy, like, a 40-inch Gengar Squishmallow from Target.
Mood. Full mood. My bed is covered in Squishmallows.
Same. I got a hanging balcony.
Oh, I want one so bad. Grace, the first, like, 6 months that we were dating, maybe, every single time they wanted to get me a gift, which is often because Grace is who they are,
it was a Squishmallow. I've met them. I know.
It was a Squishmallow. So I literally went from having zero Squishmallows to having like 20 in like a 6 month period.
Oh, that sounds like Grace. But no, it's hard to be a Gen Z in academia under inflation, under impending war, while all this stuff's going on, and still be hilarious. But we got to do it.
Someone has to be the comedic relief. And who else except the plus size queer person? I mean, it's just, that's the weight that we shoulder. It's our job.
No way. Like, don't get me wrong, like, I'm very lucky that like I am a plus size person, but I'm still able to do a lot of things. Like, I'm never worried about doing anything, and I'm very grateful that I have that privilege.
Yeah, me too.
But like, I feel like the universe had to nerf me like just a little bit, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
If I was this funny and this not ugly, this smart and this likable, and I didn't have to worry about actually like looking good and like something I just pick up off the rack or like from a Goodwill, it'd be over.
Yeah, it'd be so over.
And don't get me wrong, I love a good thrift, but I hate when I go thrifting with my skinny friends.
Me too.
Because they can just pick up like the tiniest bit of fabric and be like, it's a little big, but I'll make it work. And I was like,
yeah, no, literally, that's how my best friend from high school, we used to like go thrifting a lot because we were poor. And she literally like up until like we graduated, we're like size 00 in jeans, maybe not, but like she was little, and we would like go thrifting, and I would be like just standing there while she went through the entire like small rack, and then I'm like, well, the 2X's are over here and there's like 5 things, so I've already looked, you know, whatever.
Literally, I went thrifting with one of my friends here, and homie about squeezed into a youth extra large at 28.
I don't think I've worn a youth extra large since I was like 9. Like, I insane.
No, I had a size 11 foot as a child, like a 9 year old, and I'm so upset about that because I already had to wear like the bigger clothes.
Yeah,
and then I couldn't even get like the cool sneakers, like you know, the light bright Skechers that like lit up.
Oh, yeah, I had so many of those.
Yeah, when those came out, my feet were too big for them.
Oh, that's so sad.
I know.
Yeah, like, I had really tiny feet, so I can't relate. But
oh,
and can't relate. I said it the first time. I was like, that sounded so snotty. So I know I have to make a joke about it.
No, and then I was like, and then my dad, like, I was really upset and like I was crying because, like, you know, when you're 7 or like 8, 9, you just want to like wear like the cool shoes that all your friends have, and you can't because your big ass foot literally can't fit into anything. And God bless my mom. She drove like all around everywhere looking for like a size that had them, like queen.
Yeah.
And my dad was like, it's okay. It just means like you're going to be really tall and everything. I grew up to be 5'10". I grew up to be 5'10". I've got bigger feet than some of these guys who ended up being 6'4".
Yeah.
And I'm just like, what was I made for?
No, like, literally, I remember, like, my pediatrician as a kid, like, was always telling my mom, like, oh, she's going to be the tallest in the family. Like, she's already so tall. But when I tell you, I stopped growing in seventh grade. I have been 5'2". Since I was like 12. And it's just so ridiculous to me because I was literally like sixth grade, one of the tallest girls in my class. And then seventh, eighth grade, everyone else went through their growth spurts except me. But I literally just have been sitting here at 5'2 for my entire life. Mm-hmm. And it's so sad.
Yeah. You know, who knows? Maybe we'll get like that growth spurt, like a 26 or something.
Maybe. I just wish I was like 2 inches taller. I feel like if I was 5'4", my life would be a lot better.
Yeah, that's how I feel. Like if I was just 2 inches taller and I was 6 foot.
Yeah.
I would like that. No. But yeah, so, you know, I guess I was nerfed that way too. I wasn't 6 foot.
Yeah, like, you'd be too powerful if you were 6 foot. That's for sure.
If I was a non plus size 6 foot tall gay man doing all this that I have now, unfucking stoppable. The next Oprah Winfrey, like, really, like, honestly, we'd call, forget the OWN network, it'd be the Just Jacob network, like. No, but no, I'm just kidding, don't drag me, Oprah. Our Ozempic queen. That's no shade. She said publicly she's on it. Okay. Yeah. She said that she was on it. She was like, just straight up, like, yeah, I'm on it. Like, it was weight loss drug. Queen is honest. Queen's honest.
No, yeah, I love shade. The honesty.
Yeah. But speaking of honesty, and that's such a harsh way to go about it. But well, speaking of, like, it just makes it sound like I'm setting up for a read. Like,
speaking of honesty, here's all the things that you've done wrong this whole Zoom. Imagine this is just a whole setup for Grace to do an intervention through someone else.
Honestly, like, that'd be so iconic. But in all honesty, this is why all the reasons you are a flop.
Imagine.
No. Oh my gosh. Oh, what was said the other day? What was said the other day? I'm trying to think of like what exactly happened. But oh yeah. So some of my friends recently got engaged. Shout out to Abby and Alex. If you know, you know. You. Congratulations.
Congrats. I don't know you, but congrats.
And my friend Connor, love you too, Connor, but she has said numerous times that I have a big mouth.
Uh-huh.
She kind of hinted that, like, she was surprised that, like, I kept it a secret. And, like, I was telling my undergrad, Lexi. Also, shout out Lexi. Lexi doesn't watch the show. I don't know why I'm shouting her out, but on the off chance she does, shout out. I was telling her, I was like, I've got like really upset when people think like I can't keep a secret. Like I talk to everyone. She goes, I mean, yeah, you're a yapper for sure. And I was like,
the phrasing of that, I can.
I was just like, queen.
Absolutely read you.
Yeah, and I was just like, queen, what? I thought we were friends. Like, why would you come up in here and disrespect me like this out of nowhere? And I go, but like, I keep like the real shit like unlocked. She goes, oh yeah, no, like I totally see that.
Yeah.
And I was
that's
just,
how I am too. Like, I will tell my best friends like literally everything unless it matters. Like, yeah. If it's something that like genuinely like I'm supposed to keep a secret, like I am really good about that. But like anything else that like just happens, I'm just constantly telling everyone.
No, same. I didn't sign an NDA.
Exactly.
No.
It's not hurting anyone if I tell them this funny thing that you did. Oops, sorry.
Yeah. No. I one time had like someone upset and write me about something that I said on my show. And keep in mind, I did not name them. I really did not name them, but like I gave hints, like if you know them, like you know exactly who it was.
Yeah.
And they're all like, I'm really upset that like you did these on there. And I was just like, well, you know, like if you're really upset, you just should not do those things. Like,
yeah, literally.
You know, a novel concept. No. Oh my gosh. Today, this week, I roasted some of my students. And I'm just like, we're just chit-chatting around random shit now. This is great. This is super professional. But they had to like get in groups. And they're like, how are we going to know like whose groups are in who? And I was like, well, there's this novel thing called talking. And no one laughed. And I was just like, that was funny.
Wow, tough crowd.
I know. Y'all get Fs for not laughing. F is refined of personality. A sense of humor.
New assignment. Go learn to be funny.
New assignment. And it's evolution. Evolve a sense of humor. But no. So, Rachel, we talked about it, and like I know you're still like contemplating about when you apply again for grad school and all that, and I'm wishing you the best. I think I agree with you. I think you dodged a bullet with this cycle and everything.
Yeah absolutely.
And I'm glad that you were able to, like, although it's not the result you wanted, I'm glad you were able to find benefit and value in it.
Yeah. I won't lie, it took a lot of therapy to get there, but
and I think that's a very valid thing to go through.
Yeah.
It's always the people who don't go to therapy that send us to therapy.
Yeah. No, I literally was just talking to Grace about that the other day. I was like, doesn't it suck that we now have to deal with the consequences of other people's actions?
I know. Like, y'all go to therapy. Like, we're out here. Like, we'd be so much more successful if y'all got your own shit together. Like,
literally.
Not you, though. Like, you listen to this show. You're doing great. That person next to you, they're a mess. You're doing fantastic. You look great. But, yeah. So, I think that you taking time to process that. And, like, it's disappointing and it's like heartbreaking, like, and I think that's a very valid response to have. And the way that you were able to process that and like still move forward and get benefit from that, I think that's going to be super helpful for you down the road.
And I think like that is kind of my philosophy on life these days, is that like nothing is a waste of time or experiences for you. Like, even if things don't work out, like, there is always something that you can learn from that. But that also, at the same time, doesn't mean that you need to just be happy about everything, because that's not healthy. Like, the big thing for me with getting over the disappointment was, like, being able to like talk to my partner and to my friends about like the emotions that I was experiencing and like being able to process that with someone, but then forcing myself kind of to see the good in the situation and not just let myself sit in the sadness. And eventually I was able to like genuinely be, I would say happy, but like be at peace with what happened. And I think I was only able to do that because I first let myself be sad about it. So.
So true. So true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shout out to my therapist for teaching me how to do that.
Yeah. Shout out. I don't know you, but shout out. You're doing great. Well, Rachel, we're wrapping it up here, but.
Yeah.
I do have like one final question to ask you.
Okay.
If you could go back and tell your past self one bit of advice regarding like your career or like your professional career or your academic career, what would you tell her?
That's a good question. I think the biggest thing, and I would go back to like senior year of college me, I would say like to learn to be able to process disappointment and not let yourself get comfortable with the bare minimum. So I think that I think the biggest piece of advice that I would have for myself is just like always keep pushing yourself to learn and grow. And I've seen that a lot in my career, like especially in this like transitional period, like making sure that I'm like pushing myself to like keep moving forward and not staying still. But I think that applies to like emotional, like outside of work and academics. Like I wish I'd learned that skill about 3 years earlier in life. Maybe would have been a little bit easier for me. But yeah, I think that would be my biggest advice for myself, is just like learn how to push through the disappointment and keep moving forward. Yeah. And just don't stand still, but also don't let people take advantage of you. Move forward in the way that you want to move forward. Yeah, that's my advice.
That's really good. And I think that's a hard thing for people to learn.
But yeah,
it's really valuable. It's a canon event, you know, can't interfere. Gotta let people get there.
Yeah, I think that that's the type of thing, though, that like, it's not something that you can just like learn one day, like, oh, I'm going to do this now. It's like something that happens over time. And I think, I don't know, I think maybe it might, like we were talking about at the very beginning, let's bring it all the way around, might, you know, go back to that like transitional period of like the early 20s and like how much you're learning about the world. And it's just some things like that take time to learn. And that's okay. But also make sure that you're trying to learn them.
Real, real, real. Well, Rachel, thank you again for coming on to the show. I truly had such a blast chatting with you.
Yeah, me too.
And to everyone at home, as always, I am your host, Jacob Watts. And remember, be gay, do crimes. have a good day. What?
So be gay, do crimes.
Yeah. So, have a good night, everyone. Bye.